Welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast with me, Ken Davis.
Sponsored by Munters, experts in climate control systems for safe, high-quality battery cell production and R&D, delivering stable, low dew point conditions whilst minimising energy use.
Episode 18, Advances in Recycling Using Chromatography. I'm always fascinated by the methods the battery industry can develop to cope with recycling, particularly innovative processes to take end-of-life batteries and from them refine battery-grade materials. Essentially, the challenge of making finite resources infinite, or close to it. In this episode, I'm joined by David Sarvey of ReElement Technologies, an Indiana-based business developing scalable and deployable purification and refining processes using chromatography at the heart of their solutions.
Well, I am very pleased indeed to be joined by David Sarvey of ReElement Technologies. And a very warm welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast, David.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So recycling is a critical issue in the battery technology field. I could probably devote a whole podcast series to it. And I'm very keen to explore the variety of approaches to battery recycling. And I know that ReElement have a very interesting approach to that. So firstly, it'd be great just to get a little bit more about ReElement Technologies and the kind of work that you're doing there.
I think ReElement stands out from the other battery recyclers because we're not exclusively a recycling company per se. We are also looking into, we're a refining and a process company. So we're looking into the mined ores as well to recover the lithium from those. But we were founded on the principle of recycling and being able to introduce circularity to a lot of these materials, namely the So there's two sides of ReElement, and the first side is, which is what the technology was originally based on, is the magnet side and the rare earth side of things. And then the second side is the battery side and the critical battery element side of things. The technology was commercialized around permanent magnets and being able to recycle those and recover the rare earth elements from those. From there, we did that successfully at a commercial or a semi-commercial scale, but then we looked into the battery market and we found that the technology is equally effective for the critical battery elements, which, you know, includes lithium, nickel, cobalt, manganese, really whatever battery chemistry is coming our way. ReElement is a recycling company, but really we go beyond recycling and we get into the refinement and purification.
Interesting. And I want to dig a little bit deeper into that later in this conversation, but I'm interested at the outset of the processing that you principally involved in, which, if I understand it correctly, is really based around chromatography. And so I'm interested in terms of why chromatography, and if you could maybe just give us a kind of introduction to chromatography, as a lot of people who are going to be listening to this may be familiar with it from their college days, but may not have encountered chromatography in a significant way since.
So the chromatography process that we use today for batteries and permanent magnets, it was born in the Purdue University laboratories. It was really the almost, I believe, 40 years of research by Professor Linda Wang there. And she was looking into, if I'm not mistaken, she was looking into the application of chromatography for mineral refinement, but based upon the literature that was available for the use of chromatography in high fructose corn syrup production. And so she borrowed a lot of the industry literature and built up a large body of work. And so she was the one that was more or less responsible for the perfection of the technology at the laboratory scale. And then I believe she was a consultant later on for Eli Lilly, an Indianapolis-based, you know, pharmaceutical company. Everybody's familiar with Eli Lilly, but they drew upon her research and borrowed her as a consultant to help construct chromatography facilities for the use of purification of insulin. And the engineer that was responsible for the direct implementation of these facilities, he is now our chief engineer at ReElement, and he's really the one responsible for the design and the implementation of these commercial scale mineral refinement facilities that we're building. He was the one that really took it from the use in pharmaceuticals and food production and helped translate it to this new industry, refinement of critical battery elements and rare earth elements. And so with Bill Smith's help, we basically took an industry proven technology. And I asked Bill, we sat down before this interview and I asked him, you know, it seems like the technology that we're using at ReElement is really like a silver bullet for the refinement portion of the supply chain. So why hasn't this been implemented before? And he said, really simply, the technology just didn't have the literature behind it in order to make that leap. And then you couple that with the fact that it's just a new, novel way of approaching things. And industry, you know, for better or for worse, kind of works in it, maybe in an incremental fashion. To think of using chromatography for mineral refinement, for critical element refinement in the battery supply chain, is just such a dramatic leap in innovation terms. And so he said it's not the way things are done. It's very novel, but it's extremely effective.
I remember way, way back in my college days getting involved with chromatography, and I just about remember the principles. And the principles are kind of, there's a stationary phase and there's a mobile phase, in the sense of you've got some kind of medium, you are pushing through another medium through it. And in that process of the interaction between the stationary phase and the mobile phase, the stuff that's in the mobile phase gets separated because of its interaction with the stationary phase. That's kind of, I think, how it works. That depends on the chemistry of some quite interesting things. It depends on the chemistry of the solvent that is being used, if you like, to drive through the feedstock in its mobile phase. It also depends on the chemistry of the stationary phase, the thing it's interacting with. I'm sure what you guys are doing are way, way, way more complex than that. But that's, I think, the kind of principle that we're involved with. So it'd be good, obviously, without breaching anything which is commercially sensitive, to try to understand a little bit more about the chemistry of all those phases and what's going on in relation to specific battery materials.
I'll try to explain as best as I know how. That the guy for that technical side of thing is really E. Ding. He's the director of research and development here at ReElement. And he's really brilliant. And what he did was basically take Professor Wang's research at the laboratory scale and then commercialize it, put it to that commercial scale for us at ReElement Technologies. Chromatography itself, you described it really well at the laboratory scale. And of course, the same principles apply for the semi-commercial and the commercial scale. But the way I describe it to people is that in the commercial setting, it behaves similar to a water softening system. So, you know, your home water softener, it has a tank that's filled densely with a resin. And so when the water from the source passes through that, it passes through the resin, and then the resin binds and collects all the mineral, the metal ions that you might not want in your plumbing. So it's very similar to that. We use a resin in a similar fashion, but your home water softener does not, this is a key part for us, is that, you know, there's not a separate phase where the metal ions bound to the resin then separate and then discharge according to that layered separation. So that's the key difference, is that, you know, we have these columns, and the ones that we're using right now are about three feet in diameter and about 6 feet tall. And they are filled very densely with a porous resin. And the resin kind of depends on what feedstock we're treating, whether it be the rare earth side or the critical battery element side. So the feed, the aqueous solution, which is either a mix of rare earth elements or critical battery elements, passes through the column, and then the resin captures those ions, and then that's where the chemistry happens. But unlike the water softening system, which will capture those ions and then just discharge them, what we do is we capture them and we essentially wash them so that they then separate into their individual layers. And that washing stage, that the flow through the column is what's really critical for the commercial success of the process itself. And that was one of the main issues we had when we were taking it from maybe the laboratory and semi-commercial scale to the commercial scales, ensuring that the flow throughout the column is evenly distributed. Once you're able to master that, which we have, you have separate layers of whether you're dealing with the rare earth side or the critical battery side. You have, you know, your lithium, nickel, cobalt, manganese, not necessarily in that order. But once they're separated, you then have the instrument, the process uses instrumentation to automate the discharge of those sequentially. That's not the final product, but then, you know, it goes through some post-processing to get that final product, the oxalate or the carbonate or the hydroxide, depending on what you're dealing with. The chromatography process itself, very similar to the principles you just outlined, but the really fundamental game-changing part of our technology is the fact that you're able to insert into the columns very densely packed resin. But the resin beads themselves, they look like sand, grains of sand, but they themselves are, they have pores and channels running through them at the nanometer scale. And that's what expands the surface area for the metal ions to bind. So this column that is essentially 3 foot in diameter by 6 foot tall, and you line them up maybe sequentially, or you can stack them on top of each other, depending on the facility that you're working with. But this essentially replaces a equivalent size facility, or a facility the size of maybe an oil refinery, a campus that size, or a solvent extraction facility that is maybe the size of a football field or beyond. So we're able to take that massive processing facility and basically condense it into a 3 foot by 6 foot column. And that's what leads to the really the game-changing characteristics of the technology, which is the modularity, the scalability, the adaptability to process different feedstocks, and then most interestingly is the deployability, the co-locatability of the technology itself to insert really at any stage in the existing supply chain. So it's a really innovative, very novel use of technology.
And now a word from a sponsor.
Researching solid state. Did you know that Visala has ready solutions for R&D laboratory and scaling up manufacturing? In cases where a measurement need is identified but lacks a suitable instrument, we find solutions. Contact us at visala.com/battery.
One of the things I just wanted to pick up there, from really what you're able to achieve with a relatively small scale plant in comparison to what would have taken a much greater plant, both in terms of CapEx and physical scale, is this issue of locatability. Do I understand it that you're bringing feedstock to one central point and then processing it, or are you actually taking your equipment to where that feedstock is being created itself and processing it there? Just want to understand whether you're doing both of those things or whether you're focusing on one or the other.
We're focusing on both at the same time in parallel, and it really depends on who we speak to, depending on the offtake agreement that we set up. So we have a lot of flexibility with the technology. Like you said, we could follow the traditional, you know, vertical integration hub central processing location model. And in fact, we are doing that with our first commercial scale facility in Marion, Indiana, taking the old RCA Thompson facility there in Marion. It's about in total 1 million square feet all in all. And it used to be a major center for the development and research and development of radio technology, and later on flat screen TVs, as I understand it. Not flat screen TVs, colored LED TVs, colored TVs. But anyway, so we're taking this historic facility and repurposing it, renovating it, and turning it into a centralized processing facility. And in that space, we have had a lot of conversations about actually bringing in additional partners on the manufacturing side. So where our process ends, then they're right there in the same space to begin the battery manufacturing process. So we're really a refining and process technology company. But we are, again, because of the characteristics of the technology, we're not limited to that central processing model that you described. We can also go and support other participants within the supply chain, the battery supply chain in particular, because that's more mature and developed than the permanent magnet side of things. So if, you know, there's a number of different companies that we've talked with, and if I were to name them, you would recognize their names. They're large commercial scale recycling companies, but they don't really have an economic solution to refine the lithium part of the stuff that they're receiving. And so we can, you know, step in and provide them that support on the lithium side of things and not interrupt their, you know, their vertically integrated system that they're building out. So we can kind of peak shave and provide support on the lithium refinement portion. And then in addition to that, in addition to supporting the other participants in the recycling and battery ecosystem, we can actually go, like I said earlier, we can go directly to a mining site or a manufacturing site and set up maybe a train of 3 to 6 columns and process material right on site. It's one thing when you're talking about the manufacturing side of things. That alone is that's very innovative, to be able to continually reprocess any manufacturing waste that might exit the manufacturing process itself. That alone changes the economics of this type of supply chain. But then when you talk about co-locating or deploying on site on a mining site itself, that is really revolutionary, because the way things are managed right now is basically everything is shipped away from the mine site to a central processing facility, which if you look at the map of these things, they're mostly located in maybe troubled areas, like, you know, in places that might not have as strict environmental laws, because the processing and refinement portion, the traditional technology itself, is very chemically intensive, and it produces a lot of waste that is expensive to treat on the back end. So anyway, our process can go directly to the mine site. You know, you set up the power, you set up the water, which itself is not very intensive for our process, but you plug it in and then you're able to refine on site. So it's very beneficial for the country that holds those raw materials and those resources. They're able to recapture more of the value because they have that critical value add step that we provide with our refining technology. So if you're a nation that is rich in, for example, lithium spodumene deposits, as might be a country like Ghana in Western Africa, you have to exchange, you know, you don't have to reach an unfavorable commercial agreement where you basically ship everything out of the country to then be inserted into the supply chain. We come to you, which is what we're doing with Ghana. We come to you and we provide that value add step. So then not only do you keep more of the value of the refining side, but then we also are able to provide, you know, things that are often overlooked, like technical training, more infrastructure build out. So it's really kind of a foundational technology that leads to further industrial development in the advanced manufacturing sectors, namely EVs. I mean, EVs are very popular today. So the government of Ghana is really looking, they're partnering with us. They're looking to deploy our technology at their lithium mining sites and their manufacturing sites in order to facilitate the build out of a regional hub for them in the entire supply chain. So from the mining to the manufacturing end of things.
You're providing refining as a service, or you have the capability of providing refining as a service, which is really novel, as well as the more well-established situation whereby you're collecting feedstock, refining it, and selling it into the market. Because of its scalability and its deployability, if there's such a word, you're able to actually provide that service to other businesses, which is fascinating. Just want to come back to the issue of feedstock. I mean, do you focus on a particular battery chemistry? You know, are you dealing with some of the more novel elements? We did a podcast a couple of weeks ago about niobium, which is really interesting. What's the stance that you have on feedstock? You know, do you focus on one particular area?
We do. We have our preferences. The technology was It started and it was kind of built around the concept of recycling permanent magnets that contain rare earth elements. I think there are 17 rare earth elements, but there are really four that kind of drive the market, and it's the market mainly for permanent magnets. And those four elements are neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, and terbium. And so the technology, like I said, it was built kind of around the concept of recycling these permanent magnets in order to accelerate circularity into this market, because I'm sure as many people listening know, the rare earth side of things is really controlled and dominated from top to bottom by China. And so the US is looking to kind of diversify their supply sources of those things. And so that was one of the problems that Professor Wang was looking to tackle with her laboratory research, is really, is there a viable way to recycle rare earth elements, permanent magnets? And so anyway, our initial feedstock was wind turbine magnets, the magnets contained in a windmill. Actually, local Indiana wind farms were supplying those for us. And we were able to, pre-process them and put them through our process and, the chromatography process, and able to get that really high yield, high recovery. So 99.99% plus recovery of neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, and then a mix of praseodymium and I believe dysprosium, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so that was the initial feedstock, and that was proven successful. The refining portion of that was proven successful at the semi-commercial scale, which is just a term we use to kind of define that, pilot scale between, the laboratory and then the full commercial scale. So that was a successful commercial undertaking. And then we started to get a lot of attention around the refining of lithium. And then with that, we took basically the same technology, obviously it's still chromatography between the two product lines, but we exchanged the interior of the columns for a different type of resin. And then we were able to feed it battery-based feedstock. So that includes, in theory, recycled batteries. That's not our core competency. There's many companies out there that focus on the shredding and production of black mass. Then leads me to your original question on feedstock preference. Our feedstock preference really is the black mass, just because it spares us from having to go through that mechanical and chemical shredding process. So we have received a number of different chemistry types from a number of different industry participants. And initially, the very first trial that we ran with the battery side of things was an NMC-based chemistry. And again, the chromatography at that semi-commercial scale really exceeded not only our internal expectations, but the laboratory data itself. So we're actually able to produce a higher purity lithium and then nickel, cobalt, manganese product than we expected. It was, I think they were anticipating something like 99.5 to 99.9%, but it actually came out at 99.986 or something really high like that. And it was repeatable too, which, inspired even more confidence. So after the NMC side of things, then we really started to shift our attention, because we were able to market that and sell that and tell people, NMC is a product that we're able to treat. It's a feedstock that we're able to accept. But then we really shifted our focus to our main focus, which is the LFP chemistry, the lithium ferrous phosphate, the lithium iron phosphate. And the reason we shifted our attention to that type of chemistry is because as we started to build industry partnerships, we started to find that these recycling companies, these battery aggregators, you've heard of some, you may not have heard of others, but they all seem to be sitting on an abundance of LFP black mass, and they don't really know what to do with it. Same with some manufacturers. And so their problem is that they are still paying basically to get rid of it, because nobody wants to take it. Nobody can do anything with it. So it's a cost to them. So we were coming to those participants in the supply chain. We're saying, hey, look, we'll take that off of your hands for free, and we'll process it and actually do something with it. And we're able to recover the lithium at high yield and high purity. So it's really a complete change of economics on the LFP side of things. And I know LFP in general seems to be picking up in the industry in terms of market share, because it, you know, it has some qualities that might be superior to other chemistry types. And also I know that they're trying to diversify away from the use of cobalt if they can, just because cobalt is exceedingly rare, and it really mostly comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's not limited to the black mass either. We are also focusing heavily on, like I said, this processing of spodumene ores that contain, you know, 6% lithium. We're building out some chromatography trains to treat that. So again, our feedstock processing capabilities is adaptable. That's one of the characteristics of the technology. And it's really the pre-processing that changes, which is not our core competency. The process itself is able to handle basically any type of feedstock.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate your time wherever you are in the world. And I hope you're enjoying this regular update across the battery development industry as much as we are producing it. But when I'm not producing podcasts, my day job is running events around the world in lots of different technical fields. And I'm very pleased to announce that I and my colleague David Reeks, who runs the hugely successful Battery Tech Expo in the UK and Sweden and France, well, we're launching a new event, the Gigafactory and Battery Technology Expo, to be held in Huntsville, Alabama, USA, in June 2025, right in the heart of the rapidly expanding Battery Belt, this new epicenter of battery development, where there's huge investment taking place in both gigafactories and supporting battery technology. We're very excited about it. And there's more details in the show notes about how to find out more.
Where are you in terms of commerciality, in terms of commercial scale now?
We're on track. We're on schedule, surprisingly. I mean, these projects are big and they don't always, you know, live up to the planned schedule, but we're actually on track to start moving in equipment to our commercial scale facility in Marion, Indiana, the ReElement Marion Advanced Technology Center, as we're calling it. We're on track to move our equipment in there, and, you know, the lights are on, the permanent power is on at this moment, and we are, I believe, as you and I are talking right now, Duesenfeld, who is one of our partners, they're sending us a shipping container of LFP black mass to be sent to the Marion facility for commercial scale processing. So I can't say exactly when that's going to begin, but really, as far as I know, everything is still on track, which is really quite incredible. I mean, we have a really great team driving these things. Commercial scale should be operational this year.
Fantastic. And what about the processing which is being done at your clients' facilities? You mentioned really interesting the work you're doing with Ghana, where presumably you're supplying some of these columns to help them refine in country, if you like, rather than exporting it to be done. Where are you with commerciality on that side?
Before we go to commercial scale, I believe the plan is to go to that semi-commercial scale. So to maybe a pilot scale processing facility in Ghana with maybe a couple of our columns, you know, to exercise feasibility and to start building out that, to start building a training program around that for, you know, people looking to get hired and develop those skills. We have a subsidiary kind of running the show there. It's called ReElement Africa. We got our CEO of ReElement Africa, Ben Kincaid. I believe he is in Ghana as we speak, and he talks regularly with industry partners on the ground. And he's kind of laying those foundational partnerships and relationships to build out that ecosystem in Africa. Project ReElement Africa, I would say, is a little bit further out compared to the Marion facility coming online, but we have all the right people in the right places to make those relationships happen, and to make that the deployability, the co-locatability side of things happen quickly once Marion comes online.
Well, it's a fantastic and fascinating business model you've got. And it's been a great opportunity for me to learn a little bit more about this. And actually the future of chromatography, if you like, as a mechanism for recycling, which hadn't really occurred to me before, but it's clearly you're making great strides in that field. So what does the future hold? If we were having this conversation 5 years down the track, where do you think you'll be by that time?
Oh, that's a good question. I really think, I mean, you ask anyone in the company and they're all going to basically agree with this statement, is that I really think this technology is going to completely transform and rewrite supply chains. Very dramatic leap in terms of innovation. I think this might be one of the most innovative pieces of technology that you've never heard of. And in 5 years from now, I would not be surprised if there are ongoing construction at commercial sites all across the globe, because we really do have that international focus. We help accelerate electrification and circularity, but what we're also doing is providing nations with a alternative source of material, so that maybe the monopoly that exists today, it might not be quite what it is 5 years from now, and we can help, you know, provide an alternative source in case, you know, diplomatic relations break down, or if there's, you know, some type of control over the supply chain that shifts or something like that. But anyway, we're solving some really key problems at the national security level. I'm very excited, and I think everybody at the team would agree that this technology is really going to change the landscape.
Well, that's been an absolutely fascinating conversation. Thanks, David. I really appreciate you joining us on the Battery Technology Podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to hear about the work you're doing, and I wish you great success in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate it.
The Battery Technology Podcast is a copyrighted GSE Media Limited production. For more details about how to reach us, you'll find our contact details in the show notes or at our website, www.batterytechnologypodcast.com.